Welcome to another edition of Once Upon an Island, Tales from Lopez. I'm Ali Smulders, and with me is Janet Balzer. And today, we would like to talk about what is it like for different people to live on the island. We know that many adults who come to the island as adults choose to live here. Some of us who were born here had no choice in the matter, but kind of accepted living here because that's where the family lived. But what happens if you don't choose to live here, but there is another reason, maybe a special person you want to join, and he happens to live on the island? So today we're going to talk a little bit about that with Janet. Janet?
Yes, we've been speaking with different people, like you said, that have come, and they've come on the ferry and they look around and they say, oh, this is where I want to be. I just knew that when I got on the ferry. And for me, I came in a very different way. I have lived on Lopez now for 19 going on 20 years. I came right after college. I went to college with Heidi Steckler. We were in the theater department in Ashland, Oregon. And she said, Janet, you should come visit my island where I live. It's just beautiful. So I came to visit. And at the time, I think I came twice. The first time I came and I really liked it. It was quite nice. And, you know, and it was very different than anything I'd seen. I lived in Oregon my whole life outside of Eugene, and I was never around water very much besides fresh water, lots of rivers and lots of lakes and mountains, and which I loved. So when I came the second time, it was summertime and she was working at Gale's, and her brother Scott Steckler had just come back from India and he'd been on a 9-month trip, and so he was just laying in a hammock, you know, just hanging out. And Heidi was working full time. So Scott and I, over that week that I was here, started a very nice relationship. And he had just one term to go in his college, and so he had a lot of extra time. And he ended up coming to Ashland with Heidi and I and staying most of the school year and doing a paper there. And then after college, it was a transition time for me. It was very difficult because I loved school. I had always gone to all schools and went to college, and I just was at a loss of what to do, particularly with a theater degree. And so we decided, Scott and I decided to come back to Lopez. Well, I came with Scott with the understanding that I probably would just be here for a short period of time. We were both in our early 20s. I was probably 21 or 22. And we lived at his mom's place with his sister Heidi and her boyfriend, their friend Robert, who Scott had gone to school with, and his girlfriend. And I think even Scott's brother Chris and a friend of his from college were doing a paper. They were there, and Tiffany Farians with her son Keaton, who was like 2.5 at the time, at Carol and Al's house. And so we had all these 20-year-olds and a 2.5-year-old in this house, and that was my first hit of Lopez. And I still throughout the whole time felt like, well, this is a good place to be visiting. And I needed to think of what my next step was. As time passed, I stayed longer. And then Scott and I kind of did a little one of those separations you might do at 22 or so, you know, after 6 months of being here on Lopez, and I moved back to Oregon. I went and worked at a opera company. And then I got back together with Scott, took a long motorcycle ride, and we ended up back here on Lopez again. And he had been remodeling David Bill's barn. We lived in that for probably 6 months or so. And then there was a huge snowstorm. We didn't have running water. We had electricity by just extension cords. And we didn't have much of a source of heat. And so we left the barn after a freeze that happened in like 1991, I guess it was, or 92. And we moved back in with Carol and Al. And So that was like the beginning of not leaving. And I must say, over my time of being here for almost 20 years, it's been challenging. As a younger person, before we had children together and before we were married, I was always feeling like I was going to leave. I missed the fresh water. I missed the mountains. I missed space. I missed being able to go to movie theaters. And I loved theater. I missed doing my theater. I missed it so, so much because it's such a part of my spirit. And then Scott and I both would work in Alaska. He would fish in Southeast, and I had got a job as a cook on a yacht. And I did that for 4 summers while he was also in Southeast, and then we would travel. We went all over Asia and New Zealand. We biked around New Zealand for 3 months one time. And so we played. We'd go to Alaska, come back to Lopez, live in rentals that were beautiful. I lived in the most beautiful places on Lopez. Mm-hmm. And then we'd go travel, come back for a couple of months, go back to Alaska. And that was our routine for probably 7 to 8 years. And throughout that time, I think I was so enamored by working in Alaska, coming to Lopez, and then traveling the world, that place was not important to me.
Making money in Alaska made the travel possible.
Making money in Alaska made the travel possible. My dad always used to say, well, you need to invest in land. Why aren't you investing in money rather than traveling around the world? And to this day, I think Scott and I, neither of us regret an ounce of traveling. Mm-hmm. But when it did come time to buying a house, it was rather challenging because we didn't have enough money, you know, to afford the prices on Lopez by the time we figured it out. So I think we continued to do that, and then we decided to get married after being together for about 10 years in 1999. And we had a wedding of about 350 people. And I think that might have been one of the first times that I really realized where I was, you know, as a community. We had all these people gathering in Howard Cole's backfield under a tent on a May day, the 1st of May, and it had been pouring rain for hours and hours and probably days before, and then the sun peeked out. It was just a beautiful sunny day, and the wind was whipping, and all of these people were there to celebrate us. And I realized at that point, I would never, ever in my life, anywhere else that I had been able to be embraced and loved by so many people. And I felt very honored. I was a part of Scott's community because he had been here since he's been a young boy. And I realized how many people truly loved him and his family. And people got up and spoke at our, we had a portion where people could speak. And I just felt, that was like, oh, wow, I had never experienced anything like that at all. And so over time, I have slowly come to understand how important this community is to me. And this place. And there are still many times where I feel like I'm still an outsider, or I still want to be in a place that, you know, has more theaters or whatever. But I realize when I go off island for periods of time, it's such a nice place to come home to. And that's what Scott was saying the other day. We went camping and he said, I love coming home here to Lopez. And it's true. It has its peaceful points. It has its craziness. It has its good weather and its cold weather, and its people. Where the small community, you watch what you say because it'll come back around, and that's sometimes hard to deal with.
Did it make a big difference when you had children?
That's probably what changed my attitude of needing to be somewhere else the most.
Mm-hmm.
Our son Quinn was born in 2000 and was he born? 2001. Yeah, he was born right after. No, excuse me. Yeah. Anyway, he's nine. That's. but at that point, we were living up at Kip and Stanley's on top of Pavey Hill, in a really beautiful place. We were renting there. We'd been renting for about 7 years, and it was the first time for me that I hadn't been working. And I realized that this little person was dependent on me. And then Scott had to settle down and get a full-time job on Lopez at the same time, because we've been going back and forth to Alaska, and he didn't want to miss out on having this child and being gone
for months
at a time. Right. And so we decided to, you know, get a bit more serious about being on Lopez. I don't know that it was necessarily something we talked about, but we realized we had a child, and we were constantly looking for a place to buy. And I think for me that was hard, because we lived in so many beautiful places, and I wanted a view of the water, or, you know, a beautiful field that I could look out onto, and a pond, and things of that nature. And so we were very picky about where we would potentially buy. And over time, things got to be so crazy and so expensive that we were so limited on the possibilities. And then I put an ad in the paper, and we found through word of mouth that some people were selling their land, and they had a little house on it that they had built, and they had made a small little clearing. And we went in and we cleared it quite a bit more for light and for the ability for the water to move through there. And it's been a place, kind of, as our children have been getting older, we've created this little spot in the woods that is really our home. And our kids have only really known that place. And now we have a daughter, Camille, who's six. And it just seems like the longer that I'm on Lopez and the more I'm here, I realize that this is a good place to be. Mm-hmm. It's a positive place, I feel like, for my kids. I love the fact that there isn't a lot of cell service, and I go to the mainland and I see people talking on their cell phones at every street corner, all over the place. And I just realize they'll have that when they get older, different places, but I'm glad that's not a part of their life right now.
Mm-hmm.
Texting each other and things of that nature. And I mean, that's just a small part, but they're known. My children are known by so many adults. Quinn's having a birthday party, and half of his birthday party are adults that he's invited.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems like I may have stumbled here in an odd way, but it seems like a healthy place for me to be,
mm-hmm.
and my family. And Scott's mom and Al live here, and you know, I was speaking to Carol the other day, and she said, we were talking about people when they get older and moving away from where they live, and how it can shorten lives if they move from where they live and they love to be. And I realized we couldn't move, you know, at this point anywhere. And I think, yeah, I believe I still miss the rivers and the mountains and the lakes. But I'm becoming friends more with the ocean and the salt water.
You know, when you were
kayak.
Saying that it's such a beautiful place to come home to,
mm-hmm.
you know, I was thinking of our grandchildren who really have grown up with Lopez in a limited way, of course,
yeah.
coming here in the summer. And one of our grand boys, when he was 11, said, I will retire on Lopez.
Yeah.
He was 11, mind you, when he said this. This is such a peaceful place.
A peaceful
place. And that was his assessment.
Mm-hmm.
He is now 20, and he said to me the other day, Beppe, I still think that way. I will retire on Lopez. It's such a peaceful place.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that sense of peace, mm-hmm. I guess, very much, you know, speaks to different age groups.
It does. I was just having a discussion with some younger people, and one child said, I think I want to always live on Lopez. I just want to be here. And my first thought was the more modern thought. It's like, oh no, you know, you need to do this or go different places and see different things. And I realized, and this is of course the child saying that, and things will change, can mm-hmm. change, or may not. And I said, if you choose to live here your whole life, that is a great thing. I mean, I felt that. I really meant that. Mm-hmm. Not because I feel like sometimes our world gets so big.
Right.
And we have almost too many choices that it's overwhelming. And Lopez has many choices, and it's getting more and more.
Right. And many of the young people who were born here and grew up here will go away for years,
mm-hmm.
but come back.
Yeah. You know? And that's what I told this child. Yeah. I said, I have been noticing more and more young adults who did grow up here mm-hmm. are coming back to raise families and to live. Mm-hmm. I have noticed a huge portion.
Yeah.
And I think like Scott is one of the, I mean, there's a few in his age group, and I think his class was pretty small, but I noticed that it's the younger, it's like after him, it seems more, mm-hmm. that more of those people are doing that.
Right.
Yeah, it's an interesting place for me. I've often fought within myself about work. I think we all mm-hmm. have that when we come to Lopez mm-hmm. and figure out what it is that we would like to do and need to do, or you know, how to survive. And I think that's probably one of the biggest challenges that we'll face, myself and Scott, is just how to keep enough money flowing to you know, pay mortgage and but the other part of that for me living here, I've decided in the last, you know, 5 years maybe, that how I can be here, I feel, in a really healthy way would be if somehow our family makes choices to be able to leave Lopez as a family for it's somewhere between 2 weeks to a month, hope, you know, maybe a year.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow how to do that and to let the kids experience
the
world, not necessarily overseas, but I mean that could be part of it on certain years. I mean, even like there's a storytelling conference or festival that happens in Tennessee that Scott and I went to when we were younger, and that was so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I think our kids, you know, in a year or two would love to do that.
Right.
And just to find things that you go out, you experience, you get more knowledge, understanding, and then come back here and learn and experience what it is in your environment and kind of mm-hmm. have that flow, that connection in other ways too. That's one of my goals, is to figure out how to do that with a family of four.
Sounds good. Lovely. Yeah.
Well, we are sharing this time, Molly and I. We've decided that that August is sometimes a little bit of a difficult time to find people to say yes to come on the show, or people are so busy. So we've decided to share our hour. My sharing is different ways of how people come to Lopez, and Ollie's half hour is more, what is it like growing older on Lopez, or even just being an older person on Lopez, and how that is for her. And I also think she has ideas of how it might be for some other people, because she's had contact with a lot of people about her age. So,
well, I go back actually to the time that we bought the land, which was in 1971, and we had been looking at quite a few places on the island. I still have the list. Our children, the twins had just turned 13, and the younger one was about to turn 11. And we had gone to all these different places, and each place had something to recommend it. But we liked this one best. It had beach access, it had a view, it had an old barn with lots of junk in it, which the children loved. And when I was sitting under a tree on a little tiny hill, I looked around, and I was 47, and I said, I could grow old here. And everybody laughed, because it was kind of funny. Why would I say that? But it has actually happened, because now we are almost 40 years later.
Mm.
So I am quite aware of what it is like to grow old and to be old on the island. And I'm sure that growing old takes adjustments anywhere. If you are on the mainland someplace and you grow old, you have to adjust yourself to that whole new situation. But here I think it's made a little more difficult because you are more difficult. I have the feeling that people who choose to live on Lopez, especially the ones who came in the 70s and 80s, they were rather independent folks. They wanted to do something, to live by themselves, to kind of make sure that they had water and electricity and get a telephone eventually. But they did not expect to have all of that done for them. They were independent in their ways. And once you're really independent, growing old is more difficult. Because the one thing that you have to learn is to accept help when it's offered and to ask for help when it's needed. And I'm really aware of accepting help as being difficult. I remember when I was, it was shortly before my 80th birthday, and I was at a party where we were celebrating somebody who was leaving the island, and I needed my sunglasses in order to go outside. And several people said, oh, Oscar has your sunglasses, I'll go and get them for you. And I kept saying no to everybody, insisted on doing it myself, which meant that I was blinded by the low sun. And sure enough, I stumbled over a step that I didn't know was there in the path and broke my left wrist. And that was the best thing to happen to me, because from then on, I knew to accept help when I needed it.
Only and took you till you were 80.
That's right, it took me until 80. I mean, it was really kind of bad, but
yeah, I can imagine.
Some of us who are growing old are fortunate because they have little going wrong, just aches and pains, which everybody complains about, but nothing really drastic. In my case, my eyes really went bad, and that made things very different for me, especially since it was combined by not being able to walk anymore and having problems with my balance. And that combination made a lot of things no longer possible. Like, for instance, I used to enjoy gardening, but I could no longer really do that. However, there are ways to compensate, and I now have a little garden on the deck in pots. And so you have to learn about container gardening, mm-hmm. but it is possible. It's possible with flowers. It's also possible with veggies. And we have been eating lettuce from our own little garden. And that's the kind of thing that you have to learn to accept, that there are certain things that you can no longer do. Like, for instance, we used to get veggies from the farm. Well, I used to wash the lettuce, and I did this faithfully. And I thought I made the letters nice and clean.
Mm-hmm.
But I could not see the tiny little yellow slugs that were in the letters. And so at that point, Oscar said, from now on, I am going to wash the letters. And I said, from now on, we don't take letters from the farm anymore because it's too much work to get it clean. And that had become too difficult. Having letters in pots just takes a little bit of a rinse, but so far, no yellow slugs.
Oh, good.
So, you know, there are all these things that you have to learn to adjust to. And one of the ones that I'm very aware of is that if you're fortunate enough to have your life partner still with you, it may very well be that your roles kind of change around.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can no longer do the caring for house and environment that I used to do. And so that has become my husband's task. And it's not always easy for either one to change positions kind of late in life, because you're so used to one person does this, the other person does that, and it all works smoothly together. But I realize this is true for many older couples. They have to constantly readjust. And you can say it keeps life from becoming boring.
Yes, so it's true.
There's always something different.
Well, just to add to that, I just wanted to tell a little sweet little story. When I drove up your driveway, Oscar was out in the drive, and he had all these boards, and I said, oh, what are you making? And he said, well, I thought it would be nice to have a porch on the south side for Ollie to be able to sit in the sun. And I thought, what a thoughtful, understanding, wonderful idea. And I just really wanted to say that I just appreciate seeing the two of you together. It was quite sweet for him to say that.
So, yeah.
And I'm glad he's making that for you.
And I have to remind myself that that is a wonderful idea, which it is, you know.
Oh, it will. You'll enjoy the sunshine on your cheeks.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's see. What else can I tell about growing old on the island? Oh, yes. Being aware of what is being offered on the island for older people.
Oh, yes.
Oscar and I were, I don't know how old we were. We must have been 80 before we even considered going to senior lunch. Now, there are 2 days, Wednesdays and Fridays, when a lunch is offered at a senior center, which is at Woodman Hall nowadays. And it never occurred to us to go to senior lunch. Seniors? We were not seniors. You know, you don't consider yourself part of the seniors.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're a senior officially when you turn 65, and you can have your lunch for $4 a piece. And if you're not able to come, you can ask to have it delivered. And if you are both unable to come for any length of time, you can ask to be put on the list and have indeed 2 warm lunches delivered to your house.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people are not even aware of that possibility. But going to senior lunch means that you do not have to cook that evening. Mm-hmm. You can do with a sandwich or fruit or whatever you feel like. And also, you have an opportunity to meet some other seniors and to share stories of long ago and to discover things that you have in common and things that obviously make you different.
Yeah.
And so we have enjoyed our senior lunches. But I also want people to know, as you grow older, there may be situations where you really would need some help. And there is the opportunity to call the senior center, 2421, and ask for help. Not that the seniors necessarily can do it, But Mary O'Brien, who is the senior coordinator, is also the social worker who works for hospice and home support. And home support has quite a few volunteers who are willing to come and help out a few times a week for anybody in need of some help. And sometimes that may be, say, that somebody needs a lot of care and the husband is really weary of it and would like to have a few times that he can just go and do his own thing. And that's the opportunity to get a volunteer from home support to help out. The thing is, you have to ask for it.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to make a call and say, is it a possibility for us to get some help? And that's why I emphasize the fact that as you grow older, you have to learn to ask for help. Because it's not all, it's sometimes there for the asking. But you're the one to have to do the
asking. You must ask. And you were telling me earlier that you can't have a neighbor ask or a child
no,
ask. It has
the
to
neighbor
be...
might say, oh, these neighbors of mine really need help. Well, have them give us a call.
Yeah, so yeah. It has to be the person
yeah.
who's in need of
yeah.
help.
Yeah.
And do they also help you to go grocery shopping or things like that? Or is that something different?
That may be, in some cases, mm-hmm. what they would
could
do
something
yeah.
like of that
yeah.
nature.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that nature.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I want to tell of my friends who really have been extremely helpful when they realized that there were quite a few things that I could no longer do and that even my garden on the deck had become more difficult because I was afraid to topple over when I bent over to pick some flowers or deadhead some things that needed that, like the pansies. And they came with the idea that each one of them, and right now I think there are 6 or 7 of them, and each one of them gives me a few hours a month. And for me, it amounts to somebody come to help one day a week. You know, not for the whole day, but for a few hours.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And different people, I ask for different things. Sometimes it's getting a file in order. Sometimes it is sorting out books. And sometimes it is planting some kale for the winter. And it has become something that they enjoy and something that is great and wonderful for me. Because
that's a great idea to have your friends help. And then it's not that they're doing it constantly. They're doing
no.
it once a month.
Once a month,
a few
hours.
And they get to
visit
with you and you with them. And
yeah.
Yeah, that's a great
And
idea.
Sometimes when we haven't seen each other for a while and a lot has been happening, all we do is visit. And then they say, oh, we haven't done anything. I said, yes, we visited. And it was most important.
Yeah.
Because you also have to learn to be by yourself more when you get older and can no longer drive, which is major, of course. My sister, who is 9 years older than I am, she will be 96 in September, and she calls herself a package. I have become a package, she says. I am taken places and brought home again. She has a really hard time with the limitations of age.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's inevitable that we have a hard time with it. But...
Well, it seems that as I get older, and I'm 43, I see the spirit is still the same.
That's right.
And the things that I can do are different. And then I imagine
yeah.
by the time you get in there,
yeah.
as each year progresses, it
yeah.
seems harder because your mind is still remembering when you could jump off the porch and roll around or some of that, you know. And
that's right.
And now it's,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Run around, take a sun shower.
Yeah,
whatever
it is.
Yeah.
Go swimming. And, or you
yeah.
mean, you could, I'm sure you still do that. But just things of that nature. Or maybe
right.
you couldn't, but... Yeah, I can see that would be a good thing to be calm with. And Or not calm, but somehow to make peace with it.
To make peace with it, which is not always easy.
No.
No.
No. And I was asking you earlier, and you had a nice response. I said, well, for me, I would be curious about this because I tend to sometimes get a little lonely on Lopez. But I asked you, growing older, do you find that?
Well, for me, having been a writer for the last many years, writing is a very lonely kind of thing. And so I don't mind being alone, and I can still write. I may not be able to read what I wrote. I have to use a very strong magnifier to see what it was, but I can still write my thoughts down or make up a story, and that's okay. But it's also something that I learned early on, I think, since I lived through the Second World War in the Netherlands. You learned to be by yourself. There was no opportunity to go to the movies or, you know, do anything very entertaining. And you might not be able to go out after 8 o'clock at night, since there was a curfew. So you learned early on to do things by yourself and enjoy yourself. And I often say that to people who are interested in moving to the island. I say, do you need a lot of outside entertainment? And of course, nowadays, that really is no longer a big matter because of all the technology that makes it possible to see on a DVD, a movie, and, you know, even though you may not have reception on your TV, you can still, on the screen, have a movie that you would like to see or revisit.
Yeah.
But the thing is that you have to be able to amuse yourself. And if that isn't possible, then think twice before you move to Lopez.
Yeah.
But I do know that it is not easy for some writers to be by themselves as much as writing requires. And for some of them, it means that they have to reconsider, you know, how much writing they want to do,
mm-hmm.
because that does make a difference.
That reminded me right before you said that I remember our family was sitting at a outside of a restaurant here on Lopez years ago, and this couple came and they were visiting, and they had a young daughter, and she looks at me and she says, "What do you do here on Lopez for entertainment? We're thinking about moving here. What do you do? What do you do with your kids?" And I remember that was quite a stumping question. I mean, like, what do you do in anybody's life? You know, so it was such a broad statement. And I said a few things, and they moved here.
They did move here,
but they only lasted about 3 years, I think, is about how long they lasted here.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a very curious question. And Scott and I still remember her asking that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you do? What do you do for entertainment? What do you do in the wintertime?
Right. I remember talking to Larry Cochran. He grew up here.
Yeah.
And he'd say, we would just go outside and just find things to do. We didn't, you know, have a lot. We'd have dances and once a month or something of that nature.
And Mary Harris, who was born here on the island, when we asked her, what did you do for fun? She says, fun? We did chores.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? that was about it. And of course, chores are there year round.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, we did in the past a lot of visiting in the winter time. But that is no longer true. Winter seems to be just as busy because people are busier on Lopez too. Somehow, the world outside has encroached also on the island, and a lot of the technological, whatever you call it, but all the new stuff keeps people more busy. I always say, I thought that computers were supposed to save us time, but it doesn't seem to work that way.
No, I think people spend a lot of time on that, and then they look around and go, oh, I have to do the dishes, or I have to, you know, and then the physical life sets in, you
sets
know.
In. Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. No, but it's for many older people, the computers are more difficult to deal with, but they still, many of us can still use them. I hope to go back to the computer if that's possible, but I'm not absolutely sure, and I will adjust fairly easily, I think, because after all, I didn't start using the computer until 1988. You know.
Can you type?
Yes.
So you could use a typewriter.
Oh, yeah.
And you could use the computer if it has the.
I need a very large keyboard, you know, big letters and so on. And my grandson tried to transfer the picture for me via the computer to the big screen. And that, he worked on it for hours, and it is going to happen. But I'm waiting for the cooler days to really practice this.
Yeah.
I'm not quite ready for it. Was there anything else that I should talk about?
Well, what were we speaking of? We were speaking of gardening. And
I have mentioned the gardening.
Yeah. Oh, I remember you were talking about how you, to pay attention to things that, the smaller things in life.
I think that is very important, and most of us learn about that very easily. But how much enjoyment is there in watching a butterfly, watching the hummingbirds fight sometimes, watching a tiny green frog? I mean, all those things that in the past you may not have had time for, you do have when you grow old. And there is another thing that I wanted to mention. As you grow older, you are quite aware that death is coming closer and that you are constantly losing friends who you thought would be around for a long time. And I do know that some young people are confronted with an illness and suddenly realize what is truly important in life. You know, if somebody says to you, you have a problem and it may shorten your lifespan, you may have only one more year to live, you're going to look at things in a very different way. And actually, that is what all of us old people should be doing. In other words, we shouldn't be fussy about little items because they're truly not important. We should learn to accept all those trivial matters and pay attention to what is really important, which usually is our relationships, our connection to our family and to our friends. And if we can learn to pay more attention to that, I think we're doing well.
Yes, I would agree. And then you did say, you were mentioning, you know, earlier that you said, that, you know, as you grow older, you have time to pay attention to those little things. And I, as I sit here and I've been speaking to different friends of mine lately, where it feels like everything is moving so quickly. And like in my age group with, you know, certain age kids or jobs or whatever, and everyone's just moving. And it seems like that's the trend in general.
I think it is.
And I love you just kind of reminding us just in general, whether we're 2 or whether we're 12 or whether we're 50 or 80, to sit and enjoy the little frog that jumps by or the breeze that comes up or watch, you know, look at the sky and see the different shapes of the clouds that pass by. I mean, that's something I used to love to do when I was a kid. And how often have I done that, you know, in the last 20 years?
That's right. And if it is, there is one place where this is possible, it's right here on Ireland.
Yeah.
Because we have an environment that is really truly special. Like I can sit on the deck and look at the trees, and I love to look at certain trees that are big and solid, and like they give us a lesson. And I look at the land around us, and I realize that it was my job to, and I should mention first that when we bought the land, we made a decision right away. We will just keep it kind of wild. We just keep the rose bushes at bay, but we are not going to make a lawn. We are not going to make flower beds. We are not going to make a deer fence. We want to enjoy the deer when they come. And we will have a fence around the garden so that, you know, our garden is somewhat protected. And I must say, they haven't found out a way to climb on the deck.
Oh, that's good. I was wondering about that.
It's high enough that they
have other things.
But it was my job to kind of keep things contained around the house. And I planted ferns, and they grew, and I would, you know, trim them and work with them. I would cut back the salal. All of those things. I can no longer do that. And so the world around me gets a little wilder than it used to be. And my son reminds me, what was it like, Mom, when we came here? I said, it was a wilderness. Well, you might have to get used to a little bit more of a wilderness. Mm-hmm. And very slowly, I try to accept that and not expect things to be the way they were when I could still do it. But, you know, all of us have problems with acceptance. That is what growing old is all about. When I talk to my sister, the first thing she says, I'm old. I said, how are you? I'm old. I said, I know that.
You know, I didn't expect... You're 96, you should be old.
You should be old. But she says, I used to do these things, and I can no longer.
I just went to visit my parents in Oregon about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and my dad will be 80, and my mom's 70. I mean, yes, he's 78, and they have a nursery, and they've been going gangbusters. Just, you know, their plants are big and beautiful, and but they're getting tired, and they're getting older, and they look around, and they're both said, oh, we should have thought of this about 5 years or 10 years or whatever ago, so that their plants, now they need to sell these huge, beautiful plants, and they continue to grow and to continue to grow. And they looked around and they're like, oh, that would have been something to plan better for.
You know? But that is very hard.
That's very, like your sister's saying, I'm getting old and I don't want to, but that it's a very hard thing to think about.
Do your parents have help in the nursery?
Very little.
Very little. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And not a daughter who's going to take over.
Well, no, that would have had to happen a long time ago. I have three siblings, and it would have been something that would have needed to be planned a while ago. And, you know, I love my dad dearly, but he's a second generation German who felt like, and he lived through the Depression where he needed to do everything and do it his way. And so there wasn't space.
Yeah.
And now I think that I said to him, gosh, Dad, I'm so sorry that we're not able to take the nursery and continue on with your beautiful work. Mm-hmm. You know, and it felt good to say that to him.
Right, yeah. Right. And that's what I would really say to end this hour. Be sure to say the things that you wanted to say and to talk to your grandchildren about the things that you think are important. Because I hear so many stories, I would have loved to ask my mother about such and such. And by all means, do that kind of asking when it's still possible.
Yes, and another thought is if there's a story that you want to tell, what I did years ago, and now it's, you know, I'm sure that the devices are different, but I went out and I bought a little recorder and I have tapes. And when my children were babies, I started recording their voices. And then at first I was doing it once a month or something. And then now it's once a year. But I have these recordings of their little voices as they got older. And it might be a grandparent might want to think about telling the story, even if the grandchild or the child doesn't ask these things, because it could be someone somewhere later might find that story and it might really mean a lot to them.
That's right. And don't think, well, they're not going to be interested. They may not be interested now, but they will be interested when they are more aware of time passing.
Yeah, I
and
agree.
They themselves are getting older.
Yeah. Well, it's been a pleasure.
Well, thank you. I really enjoyed hearing about your life with Scott.
My little whoop. Short little blip.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
And so we have come to the end of another edition of Once Upon an Island, Tales from Lopez. And we thank you for listening. This program was pre-recorded.